咱得种了，种嘛。咱们可能碰到的是种，这个没有错。嗯。有一帮人嘛，那股子开的把我给弄着，他们不干了，你知道吗？
Remember, let's just resume. They will catch us on the way. We were on chapter complaints. Yeah, we were going to deal with complaints in the Principal Act. I'm not sure if is there anything in the amendment. No, we don't have something like that. In the new amendment? Oh, it's towards the end. Okay. Okay, let's continue. Can you lead us?
Thanks, Chairperson. Complaints, any tenant or landlord or group of tenants or landlords or interest group may in the prescribed manner lodge a complaint with the tribunal concerning an unfair practice. Two, once a complaint has been lodged with the tribunal must, if it appears that there is a dispute in respect of a matter which may constitute an unfair practice, A, list particulars of the dwelling to which the complaint refers in the register referred to in subsection 8. B, through its staff conduct such preliminary investigations as may be necessary to determine whether the complaint relates to a dispute in respect of a matter which may constitute an unfair practice. C. Where the tribunal is of the view that there is a dispute contemplated in paragraph B and that such dispute may be resolved through mediation, appoint a mediator which may be a member of the tribunal, a member of staff, or any person deemed fit and proper by the tribunal with a view to resolving the dispute. D. Where the tribunal is of the view that the dispute is of such a nature that it cannot be resolved through mediation, or where a mediator contemplated in paragraph C has issued a certificate to the effect that the parties are unable to resolve the dispute through mediation, conduct a hearing and subject to this section, make such a ruling as it may consider just and fair in the circumstances. 3. For purposes of a hearing contemplated in paragraph D of subsection 2, the tribunal may, A, require any rental housing information office to submit reports concerning inquiries and complaints received, as well as on any other matters concerning the administration of this act within the area of jurisdiction of that office. B, require any inspector to appear before the tribunal to give evidence, to provide information, or to produce any report or other document concerning inspections conducted which may have a bearing on any complaint received by the tribunal. C. Require any rental housing information office to advise the tribunal on any matter concerning a dwelling or concerning a complaint received from any landlord or any tenant within the area of jurisdiction of that office. D. Summon any tenant or landlord or any other person who, in the tribunal's opinion, may be able to give evidence relevant to a complaint to appear before the tribunal. E. Summon any person who may reasonably be able to give information of material importance concerning a complaint, or who has in such person's possession or custody or under such any, summon any person who may reasonably be able to give information of material importance concerning a complaint, or who has in such person's possession or custody or under such person's control any book, document or object to attend its proceedings and to produce any book, document or object in his or her possession or custody or under his or her control, to give evidence or to produce information under his or her control. F. Call upon and administer an oath to or accept an affirmation from any person present at the meeting in terms of paragraph A, B, or C, or who has been summoned in terms of paragraph D or E. 4. Where a tribunal at the conclusion of a hearing in terms of paragraph D or subsection 2 is of the view that an unfair practice exists, it may. There's an amendment in the 2007 one. Yeah, section 13 of the Act, yeah. Section 13 of the Principal Act is hereby amended, A, by the substitution in subsection 4 for paragraph A of the following paragraph. Rule that any person must comply with a provision of this Act, yes. B, by the deletion in subsection 12 of the word and at the end of paragraph A, the addition of the word and at the end of paragraph B, and the addition to that subsection of the following paragraph. Issue. Okay. 4B. Where it would appear that the provisions of any law have been or are being contravened, refer such matter for an investigation to the relevant competent body or local authority. C. Make any other ruling that is just and fair to determine any unfair practice, including without detracting from the generality of the aforegoing, a ruling to discontinue 1. Overcrowding, unacceptable living conditions, exploitative rentals, or lack of maintenance. 5.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on this specific subsection, because this is quite a long section in itself, so I thought to point out while we are here, there are two public comments that maybe can be taken into account. The one was a request to add in subparagraph C, non-payment of just rentals as described and contracted to in a valid lease agreement. And I propose that it should rather be non-payment of non-exploitive rentals. And then the second request relates to penalties and whether the tribunal should be competent to impose penalties. And again, the question of eviction came up here. Thank you. Chairperson, I think specifically the first one in respect of the non-exploiting rentals, if non-payment is that there may be an order in that, the committee can decide if that should be added. The wording, let me maybe look, just refer you to the correct, it is row 22 on the document that had all the tables. Yeah, it's row 22 and row 24. Which then deals with the penalties. So I think the committee should decide whether we would like to add the termination of non-payment of just or non-exploitive rentals as described and contracted to in a valid lease agreement, and secondly, whether we would like to give the competency to impose penalties.
That's the issue, but if I may raise my opinion, I think the issue of exploitation and malpractices, it's one of the issues that is being a thorny issue within the rental sector. It's not all, but there are those who are taking advantage of the poor of the poorest. So I think to address that issue, it would be wise if we can also include that. But you can see how to put it. Mr. Singh?
Currently, in the Act, it's got discontinued exploitative rentals. It's there. I'm more interested in the additions. What you're proposing, Charmaine, we've got what was this 4C and then 4, Roman 4, that we add a 5 and a 6. If you can just read the wording that you propose we put in there, please.
The first wording relates to non-payment of non-exploitative rentals. So that would become number 5, Roman numeral 5, so that it reads, make any other ruling that is just and fair to terminate any unfair practice, including without detracting from the generality of the aforegoing, a ruling to discontinue 5, non-payment of non-exploitative rentals as described and contracted to in a valid lease agreement. 6, impose penalty. I'm not sure if the penalty would fit in there. It's more to discontinue non-payment of non-exploitative rentals as described and contracted to in a valid lease agreement. That would be considered here. But the second issue in this whole of all the rulings that the tribunal may make will be the issue of whether they should be able to impose penalties and whether they should be able to make an eviction order in certain circumstances.
So I think the issue of penalties is not accommodated here. We can put it in the roles of the functions of the RHTs, as well as the issue of evictions. It's not in their jurisdiction so far, so I don't think you can add it here. Okay.
But the issue about the, and I'm not sure if it must come as a 5-year, because a ruling to discontinue, you're actually saying that they can make a ruling where to force people to continue paying their rentals if it is not deemed exploitative. But it doesn't fit in with this precursor about a ruling to discontinue. So shouldn't it just be a clause D? Can't we just have it as a clause D in that sentence that you've put it in? Because it can stand alone.
A ruling contemplated in subsection 4 may include a determination regarding the amount of rental payable by a tenant, but such determination must be made in a manner that is just and equitable to both tenant and the landlord and takes due cognizance of A, prevailing economic conditions of supply and demand.
That one, I don't know why. What did we think, Mr. Steen? Supply and demand, because supply and demand is the one that's the issue of market, is the one that is oppressing our people. So we cannot promote it to such an extent. You see, we are over promoting it, because what we are supposed to be doing, really, for instance, whatever. We have to also consider that our people are having their circumstances. There's pervasive poverty and the unemployment rate currently. We've got this unemployment rate, there's this poverty, there's also these inequalities that we are experiencing. So we cannot say put it point in blank that we are going to consider the supply and demand. We can put it the other way, at least, which is not going to offend the markets. Otherwise, now it's derogative to our people when we put the supply and demand. He says it's derogative because really our people are very, very poor, and the government cannot, Novas Ngatini will never, never complete. This process will never, never end of providing people with houses. And unfortunately, cannot provide this 2.3 million, the current number of people, which is 2.3, let's say, yes, 2.3 million with houses. But the problem is, we are perpetuating this thing. These people are renting. They are using a child support grant. They are using child support grants to rent. And even, that is why we said, Oshamin must also get this policy. Want to get this rental policy that we are, the current one that we are having. What does it say? So, and we cannot stop those people to rent. No, they can. They were saying that they must rent, because they've got no place to stay. But at the same time, we cannot promote this thing as supply and demand in our legislation. Doris?
Thank you, Chair. I think maybe if we put it in this way, in the way that this sentence will read as follows, that I'll start. But such determination must be made in a manner that is just and equitable to both the tenant and landlord and takes due cognizance of their prevailing living conditions. I don't know.
I'm totally disagreeing with this one. This supply and demand, we can't use that.
Chairperson, may I suggest that we perhaps simply delete the words of supply and demand, because that means prevailing economic conditions in general, everything that has to do with the economy. It is still just and equitable in that both parties' economic conditions must be taken into account.
That was going to be my suggestion as well, because we mustn't lose sight of the fact also that the bill is supposed to encourage rental housing. Now if we are going to be too restrictive, then particularly the private sector, are simply not going to provide rental housing. And whether we want to acknowledge it or not, out there in the street, supply and demand dictates the price. So yes, I would go along with it, because there is the next 1B there also puts a bit of a caveat on it, the need for a realistic return, so that landlords can't just decide, well, there's no supply in this particular area, the demand is great, so we're going to charge 10 times what we should really charge. So the next one there gives the tribunal the powers to also determine whether it's realistic. So I think it balances it out. But yes, I would go along with...
The supply and demand, that's the only thing that I had a problem. Because rent, it can be negotiated. That is why I was saying, Mr. Steyn, we need to come to terms on this one. You can't give a person a small room where he cannot even fit a double bed, and then you cost that person 1,000 or 1,500. That is unfair. That is unfair. That is those issues that we are referring to here. So that is why we have to be careful about the legislation. For instance, if you are saying that this supply and demand, and at the same time, this rent determination, I still think that it is important that it has to be looked at, because people, you can't give a smaller room and charge 1,500. No, it's unfair. And people, they've got no place to go. So these rental tribunals, at least I think in the regulations, there must be minimum standards that can be put there, even in terms of rent. I don't know. As we have put it with social housing. We've done it with the social housing. So even in this one, there has to be something that relates to the issue of rent. And in fact, that is guiding those tribunals. We are all in business. All of us want to be in business. We are not going to be here forever. So, but we must be, make sure that our people are not exploited just because we are in business. So we have to guard against that as the legislators, because at the end of the day, the majority of this country is poor. There are very few people who have got means to do. So we cannot run away from that fact. People are renting. I mean, the smallest town, the Matatiele, people are paying rent, exorbitant amount of rent, because they don't pay us. They are renting. So it's unfair. It's unfair. So we need to look at that. Even if we have to, this legislation must talk to that, the regulations must look at this, even if it's a maximum or minimum. The square meters, there should be a guiding in terms of the square meters.
B, the need for a realistic return on investment for investors in rental housing. And C, incentives, mechanisms, norms and standards and other measures introduced by the minister in terms of the policy framework on rental housing referred to in section 2.3. 6. When acting in terms of subsection 4, the tribunal must have regard to A. The regulations in respect of unfair practices, B. the common law to the extent that any particular matter is not specifically addressed in the regulations or a lease, C. the provisions of any lease to the extent that it does not constitute an unfair practice, D. national housing policy and national housing program, and D. the need to resolve matters in a practicable and equitable manner. 7. As from the date of any complaint having been lodged with the tribunal until the tribunal has made a ruling on the matter or a period of 3 months has elapsed, whichever is the earlier, A. the landlord may not evict any tenant subject to paragraph B. The tenant must continue to pay the rental payable in respect of that dwelling as applicable prior to the complaint, or if there has been an escalation prior to such complaint, the amount payable immediately prior to such escalation, and C. the landlord must effect necessary maintenance. 8. The tribunal must keep a register of complaints received and complaints resolved with such details as may be prescribed and quarterly provide the local authority with whose jurisdictions dwellings are situated in respect of which complaints have been received, with a list of complaints received and complaints resolved in such format as may be prescribed. 9. As from the date of the establishment of a tribunal, as contemplated in Section 7, the dispute in respect of an unfair practice must be determined by the tribunal unless proceedings have already been instituted in any other court. Number 10, nothing herein contained precludes any person from approaching a competent court for urgent relief under circumstances where he or she would have been able to do so were it not for this act.
This one, you remember in the sectional title?
There we go.
You remember in the sectional title? We said we must first get to the appeal before you get to the court. So here we are contradicting ourselves. We are saying because the landlord has got money, the tenant has got no money. So to be fair, why are we saying there should be this appeals body that we are establishing, internal one, and then we said no body where was this thing where you were reading?
Number 10.
Yes. no person is precluded with a court. What does it mean? Where does it fit in? It must be clear you can go after the internal appeal.
Chairperson, there's three instances here that is identified to go to a court. The one is if it's urgent. In other words, it is urgent matters are usually matters that has to be heard immediately or within the next day. The urgent court sits per week. So it is something that must be finalized this week. So that will be urgent. The second one will be for normal recovery of arrear rentals. So it's a normal summons issued in terms of the lease. There's not necessarily unfair practice involved. And thirdly, for eviction. So I don't think that this section impacts on the normal day-to-day activities of the tribunal. It is the only one where there might be a parallel institution of actions where you can do it either in the tribunal or in the court is on the urgent relief. But the others, the arrear rental or the eviction, those are things that the tribunal can't make decisions on unless there's the unfair practice with the arrear rentals. So in that sense, this is actually supplementing the tribunal. It's not replacing.
Maybe won't be maybe a lot that you use the same clause to say that this one was an urgent matter. That's why they took this one.
That the rules will. Can you put it on record? Let's put it on record that the regulations should be able to address this matter.
A magistrate's court may, where proceedings before the court relate to a dispute regarding...
For 11.
A magistrate's court may, where proceedings before the court relate to a dispute regarding an unfair practice, as contemplated in this Act, at any time refer such matter to the tribunal.
That number 11 is being deleted in the current amendment, and then section 10A is inserted, which reads, the tribunal must, and then it was amended yesterday, within 30 days of receipt of a complaint, refer any matter that relates to evictions to a competent court. And then the next one, 11, is deleted,
okay.
And then we move to 12.
Now, just in terms of the numbering, can we not just substitute 11 with this one instead of 10A? Like it has been done with others, where you actually rewrite 11 but still number it 11.
Yeah.
Yes. Because then 11 is not going to be there. You're going to have 10, 10A, and then 12.
The tribunal may, I think there's an amendment on number, is it C? Tribunal may make a ruling as to cost as may be just and equitable, and B, where a mediation agreement has been concluded pursuant to section 13(2)(c), make such an agreement a ruling of the tribunal. I think there's an addition of C in 2007. Issues, violation, attachment orders, and account orders. By the substitution of subsection 13 of the following subsection, 13A ruling by the tribunal is deemed to be an order of Magistrates Court in terms of Magistrates Court Act 1944, Act Number 32 of 1944, and is enforced in terms of that act. Is it this one? By the deletion in subsection 12 of the word end, and by the deletion of subsection 12 of the word end, and at the end of paragraph A, the addition of the word end at the end of paragraph B, and the addition of that subsection of the following paragraph. Issues, prolation, and attachment orders, and grant interdict. In the Principal Act, a ruling by the tribunal is deemed to be an order of Magistrates Court in terms of the Magistrates Court Act 1944, Act Number 32 of 1944. There was an amendment. By the insertion of subsection 12 of the full. This one here. From Charmaine. Yeah. By the insertion of subsection 12 of the following subsections. 12A. The tribunal may, acting on its own accord or on application by any affected person, resign or vary any of its rulings in such rulings. A, where erroneously sought or granted in the absence of the person affected by it. B, contain an ambiguity or patent error or omission, but only to the extent of clarifying that ambiguity or correcting that error or omission. Or C, were granted as a result of a mistake common to all parties to the proceedings. 12B, the tribunal may act on its own accord when it is supplementing accessory or consequential matters, including A, court orders, B, interest or ruling debts, C, clarification of a ruling so as to give effect to the tribunal's true intention. D, correcting clerical, arithmetical, or others or other errors in its ruling. E, altering an order to court where it was made without hearing the parties. 12C, an application for rescission or variation must be brought within 14 days of the ruling.
Where we included that on, in fact, on the receipt of the ruling by the affected, ne? Yes, we included that in the morning. Yeah. Okay.
I raised the issue about this, as it stands, makes specific references to an application. And I said there's also the issue where the tribunal of its own accord. So there won't be an application. And obviously within reason, there should be a time frame within which they make those, you know, other than grammatical and other corrections. But you can't leave it open-ended for them as well. Well, I think they should also have 14 days. If we're going to put 14 days, it should be the same. We just need to make a distinction that it's both application and of their own accord. And I don't know, Charmaine, if you want to put something there where you indicate we have to make provision if it's those other types of errors, the normal, you know, that can be made after 14 days of issue.
No, we're agreeing on that one. Okay, continue, Lebo.
Information offices. Charmaine, is there an amendment? Eh? Oh, 14. Oh, before we get to information offices, 14 in 2007, the tribunal does not have jurisdiction to hear applications for eviction orders. That was from 2007.
Amendment.
Go one up on that. Also in 2007, you asked earlier about we should possibly look at the enforcement and so on. It was amended in 2007, and it talks about and is enforced in terms of, and it refers to the Magistrates Courts Act. So that's the act that will see to the enforcement of it.
Which is
13C? It's 13?
No, yeah, it's 6C. Yeah. 6C.
Yes, that's the one.
Can you read that section, Leah? Section 6, Wong. Okay. Section 6, Queen. Yeah, amendment of section 13.
From 2007. By the substitution for subsection 13 of the following subsection, 13A, a ruling by the tribunal is deemed to be an order of a magistrate's court in terms of the Magistrates Court Act 1994, Act Number 32 of 1944. And is enforced in terms of that act.
So, that's the enforcement is covered there. But now, where is the problem? Because this legislation was amended in 2007 and we still have the same challenges. What could be the problem now? And how are we going to ensure that this problem is being addressed? And then? Why should we...
Information offices. I think here we're going to refer to the 2011 amendment. It's from... Amendment of Section 14 of Act 50 of 1999. Section 14 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A, by the substitution of subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1A, 1. every local municipality may establish a rental housing information office to advise tenants and landlords with regard to their rights and obligations in relation to dwelling within their area of jurisdiction. And B, by the substitution of subsection 2 of the following subsection, every local municipality may, subject to the laws governing the appointment of local government officials, appoint or designate officials to carry out any duties pertaining to the to such rental housing information offices.
Thank you, Chairperson. With the public comment, there were opposing views here in respect of whether the rental housing information offices must be made compulsory or given that some provinces might not have the necessary budget or the necessary capacity, not. So there were the two views. In the comments document, the table, that speaks to rows 32, 33, and 34, where the Commission for Gender Equality said it must, it's a must, it's not a may. And SELGA and the Breda Valley Municipality commented to say, no, it is not, it shouldn't be a must, it must only be may.
It must, because we, the national government is going to appropriate funds to the provinces for the function. So the province is going to make a budget for the function. So we have sorted out. So I think, as you know, I think we should make it our practice as the portfolio committee to say where we have not considered the public comments. We need to comment why we have not considered it in our report. So I think it is important that we respond to that. But no, why we are not agreeing? Because we are trying to enforce, because it is important, rental, it is important, very, it is a crucial matter. Therefore, there must be offices that are, those information offices, as proposed by the amendment, because it's not saying appoint a full-time, you designate or you appoint. So the budget is there. It should be budgeted by the province to make sure that all the municipalities, they do have this office. So we are not taking me. We are taking must be there. Thank you.
Some of the submission. I share your sentiments, by the way. I mean, if we're going to make it compulsory for every province to have a rental tribunal, there should be some sort of information office. But something interesting here by SELGA, for example, where they suggest that perhaps only municipalities that have been granted full level 3 accreditation and above should be made compulsory. I don't know if we want to entertain something like that. Because some of the other smaller municipalities, if we say they hardly have a housing component within the municipality.
The smaller, in my municipality, I always like to make an example of Matatiel. There is a housing officer in Matatiel deployed by the province. He's working for the province. So there is an official there. So why was it? But I think what is raised by SELGA, those municipalities, those metros should budget for themselves, but the province should provide for the smaller Nyana municipalities.
For provinces.
For small Nyana municipalities, but those who have been accredited, they can put that in their budget. I know that you are going to say, I know what you want to say. There's USDG grant. We are putting it in there. So whatever grant, I'm not saying they can use the USDT grant, whatever grant they receive from human settlements, there must be a percentage that is allocated to do that. So they can budget for the office, and then the money that comes from the fiscus should include, but the province should provide for the local, smaller Nyana local municipalities.
There's really two issues here. One is a rental housing information office, which will obviously have staff that work, and one is purely just officials that are either appointed or designated. So in that case, there may not necessarily be an information office, but there must be, and this is where I think we must have the word must. So at the very least, there must be officials that are trained to provide and give the information. So there's two. My suggestion is that in the one case where we talk about the Housing Information Office, that perhaps it should be May, and we may want to put that level 3 accreditation. They must have it. But in the other case, I agree with the must. At the very least, there must be officials that can give information. Well, it is separated already. The one clause is for Housing Information Office, and B is for the officials. So it's already separated.
Look, I don't want to sort of argue strongly for this. Perhaps I do want to argue strongly for this. And, you know, I'm not sure why we are separating metros and the smaller little ones, municipalities. Because even your metros are really battling with these unfunded. You know, we're dumping more and more stuff at the metros. And yesterday, from what I heard, the provincial budget is going to provide for that. So why are we now saying, let's separate out these two lots of municipalities and the metros, they must set up their own thing, with their own costs and that. I really think that that's being unfair to the metros. But I do agree that there must be a must, and it's a may here at the moment. Now, that must be a must. We can't have all this rental stuff out there and there's no place where people can go to, be it a person or an office. But I really do just have a strong opinion about the unfunded mandate.
The reason why I'm raising
function
this.
Must follow, finance must follow function.
No, the reason, they are accredited. They are already accredited. And at the same time, the metros are making huge sums of money, billions. They are making money. But what we are saying, those small municipalities, it's difficult. They can't even have a revenue to collect. So that is the reason why I was saying that at least there should be that consideration for the small municipalities. But the metros, at least they can have that rental office, and provide the necessary resources. But again, it's subject for, we can discuss it even more in depth next week after Charmaine has done a certain research about that. Otherwise, I'm not so stubborn. I can't stick to that one if the facts are against me. So, but for the fact that the small municipalities, they do struggle rather than the metros. Yes.
Chairperson, just for Member Bowman's consideration, I think we mustn't lose sight of the fact that when we talk here about Housing Information Offices, it doesn't necessarily mean a new office has to be established. If there's some sort of a housing office already that deals, like I said earlier, with subsidies and all sorts of things. What we're really requiring is that they must now have people with knowledge about rental and the tribunals. So it could be an established office already where you have one additional, either an additional staff member or, in fact, one person that's there already is designated to deal with those. So it may not necessarily, but it can, lead to additional costing and things like that.
Housing Information Office. The functions of Rental Housing Information Office are two: A, educate, provide information and advise tenants and landlords with regard to their rights and obligations in relation to dwellings within its area of jurisdiction. B, provide advice to disputing parties. Hey, Penix. B, provide advice to disputing parties on reaching solutions to problems relating to dwellings. C, refer bearers to the tribunal or parties. Refer parties to the tribunals. D, comply with any request of the tribunal in terms of Section 13. And E, keep records of inquiries received by the office and to submit reports in relation thereto to the tribunal on a quarterly basis. Regulations. 15, there were amendments in the 2007 Section 15 of the Principal Act is thereby amended, A, by the substitution of subsection 1 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. The minister must, after consultation with the standing or portfolio on housing.
No, it's relevant.
It's fine. The minister must, after consultation with relevant parliamentary committees and every MEC, by notice in the Gazette, make regulations relating to.
There was public comment on this issue that SALGA should also be consulted before regulations are issued.
I think that one, SALGA is a stakeholder of human settlements. So whenever there is anything that is happening within the human settlements, SALGA is consulted. If they are not consulted, I think they have got a right to lodge a complaint. But I don't think it's proper that we can put it here. It's like any stakeholder. If they are not, I also report that we'll address that because I believe even with regulations the SHRA, they participated. So if they are not called, it department here we call me Kubaya Visnayas.
Relating to A, anything which may or must be prescribed under Chapter 4, B, the procedures and manner in which the proceedings of the tribunal must be conducted, C, the forms and certificates to be used, D, the notices to be given by the tribunal in the performance of its functions, powers, and duties, E, the functions, powers, and duties of inspectors for the purpose of carrying out the provisions of this Act. F, unfair practices which amongst other things may relate to the changing of locks, deposits, damage to property, demolitions and conversions. I think in the 27 amendments, evictions were deleted. Forced entry and obstructions of entry, house rules, subject to the provisions of the Sectional Titles Act, 1986, Act Number 95 of 1986 were applicable. Intimidation, issuing of receipts, tenants, committees, municipal services, nuisances, overcrowding and health matters, tenant activities, maintenance, reconstruction or refurbishment work, or G, anything which is necessary to prescribe in order to achieve the purpose of this act.
Thank you, Chief. Two things that has come up in respect of regulations is the one that you have mentioned on the minimum or maximum standards in respect of rent and deposits. So what I'll do is I'll go and have a look at the social housing, what was done there, and maybe add that. And then just something that I need to make 100% sure of. Under Section 13, Sub 10, there was a comment that that must also be regulated, where it says nothing herein contained precludes any person from approaching a competent court for the urgent relief or the recovery of arrears or the eviction. Regulations in that regard, I'm just not 100% sure what the regulations in that regard must be, but I know there was a comment that that must also be in.
So the point is, we are saying you stated that in issues of matter of agents. So I think we can, I mean, they can be an example prescribed of those, or example of those issues, so that people must not take an advantage to say no, it was an agent to him, but when you it's no more an agent issue. So it must be addressed in the regulations.
At least 1 month prior to the publication of any regulations contemplated in subsection 1, the MEC must, by notice in the Gazette, set out amendment J. MEC was substituted with the minister. At least 1 month prior to the publication of any regulations contemplated in subsection 1, the minister must notice in the Gazette set out. What? The minister's intention to publish regulations in the form of a schedule forming part of such notice, setting out the proposed regulations and inviting interested parties to comment on the said regulations or make any representations which they may wish to make in regard thereto. Chapter 5, General Provisions. Offences and penalties. Any person who A, fails to comply with Section 4 or 5, 2 or 9, B, has been duly summoned under Section 13, and who fails without sufficient cause to attend at the time and place specified in the summons, or to remain in attendance until excused by the tribunal from further attendance. C, has been called upon in terms of Section 13(3)(f) and who refuses to be sworn to make an affirmation as a witness. D, fails without sufficient cause to answer fully and satisfactorily any question lawfully put to any such person in terms of Section 13(3), to produce any book, document or object in any such person's possession or custody or under any such person's control which any such person was required to produce in terms of Section 13(3)(e). E, with intent to deceive the tribunal, produces before the tribunal any false, untrue, fabricated or falsified book or document. F, willfully furnishes the tribunal with information or makes a statement before the tribunal which is false or misleading. G, fails to comply with any ruling of the tribunal in terms of Section 13(4). H, fails to comply with a request of the tribunal in terms of Section 13(3)(a), B, or C. Or I, contravenes any regulation. will be
2007 amendment.
Okay.
Has an HA. Unlawfully locks out a tenant or shuts off the utilities to the rental housing property or. Same? Oh, 2006. What is this? 2007 amendment. Amendment of Section 16? Yeah.
HA has been added, which reads as follows. Unlawfully locks out a tenant or shuts off the utilities to the rental housing property or. Yes. Then it goes to I. Yes.
And then just the or in H also is deleted. Or. At the end of H? The existing H? You got that?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so that all is deleted also in 2007.
All right, thanks. Then it goes to I, contravenes any regulations, will be guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment, not exceeding 2 years, or to both such fine and such imprisonment. Review.
Chairperson, if we have a look at these penalties, or rather the offences, what is an offence? Is if anything in Section 4 is not complied with? Now, if we look at Section 4, that is where there's discrimination in the advert, where the right to inspect is not adhered to, where the tenant's home is searched, property searched, possession seized, privacy of communications infringed, the landlord's right to regular payment of rental, that's actually made an offence, recover unpaid rental, so the fact that you don't pay becomes, but, oh wait, the next one is 5.2, which is reducing the lease to writing, and then 5.9, which says it must comply with subsections 6, 7 and 8. 6, 7 and 8 deals with the lease. The rest of this deals with the tribunal and its process. One thing that's absent is something that you have actually mentioned, where there's a deposit and it must be placed in an interest-bearing account. That is not made an offence. But non-payment of rental is made an offence. So that doesn't seem right to me. And then also compliance with the tribunal's orders, there's two places where the tribunal's orders are mentioned, but only one is made an offence. So I would also recommend that both instances where the orders are dealt with be made offences.
Okay. Review. Without prejudice to the constitutional right of any person to gain access to a court of law, the proceedings of a tribunal may be brought under review before the High Court within its area of jurisdiction. Repeal and amendment of laws. The laws specified in the schedule are repealed or amended to the extent indicated in that schedule. This section of savings has it been cut? Yeah, the savings section was deleted in the 2007 amendment.
Okay.
Then we jump to short title and commencement. This act is called the Rental Housing Act 1999 and comes into operation on a date determined by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. Two, in applying subsection 1, different sections of the Act may come into effect on different dates, and different dates may be determined for different provinces.
Because we are dealing with the rental amendment, housing amendment. Né? So we're not going to change anything from the principal act. it will remain the same, but the amendment will read as this act is called the Rental Housing Amendment Act 2011. So we are clear on that one. But I wanted to raise something before we close. If we go back to 2, during the period of 3 years referred to in subsection 1, the minister must monitor and assess the impact of the application of that subsection on poor and vulnerable tenants and take such action as he or she deems necessary to alleviate hardship that may be suffered by such tenants. For the purpose in the Principal Act, in 19.2a, deleted where? Was it deleted? Why was it deleted?
Because it was formed part of the Rent Control Act, which was then abolished.
But no. Has it been? I understand that it belonged to. It does not matter if the intention was good. It can be taken to this or modified, because I think that is where we find that our people are being exploited. They are not considered at all when it refers to the issue of the vulnerable people. So we'll run and protect Ongawankulu. So that is why it is important to say, we are not saying we are bringing it back, Mr. Stay, but why it was just taken at all instead of being modified. Is it necessary? Because if it was there in that act was repealed. We all agree, which was right. But if something that is in the old act, which is good for the people, so why it should be taken out instead? If Mhlawumbe izoba ne-effected ile instead of imodifywe, why? Because this act was defending the poor of the poorest. So something that is defending the poor of the poorest, we prefer to take it out. So I think something must be worked on this one. Okay, come on.
What I want to say, Chairperson, is that sometimes when you work on an act and you have this conflict of interest, that will stand in the way of doing the right thing, then we end up thinking of ourselves than thinking of those poor people on the ground. That's the main problem. I think the people who decided to withdraw this had interest in these rentals.
I don't know, but I still believe. Now, I'm coming from a very, very poor background, so I know how to be poor. If that act, the old act, apartheid act, was able to protect the poor, and then the current government cannot protect the poor, it's very funny. But I'm not saying it can be changed, the way it is put, but in a manner that we ensure that government must take care of the poor, of the poorest. Because it's not that those poor people, they are renting. Those poor people are renting. They are not all getting those subsidies. Those forums, I don't know if forums or forums, but they are not all getting those currently. We are not in that state where we could say now everybody is comfortable. We still have these people. Shami.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think subsections 2 and 3 actually speaks to what we discussed in section 2, where we were talking about whether there is this duty on government to some extent, where we want to look at the policy. And I think once we have that policy, looking at the policy, if subsections 2 and 3, now taken out of this context of the Rain Control Act, and more looked at in the context of the current rains policy, these two can perhaps even be included in section 2. So,
it reminds me, of course, there was a white lady was here one time. The furniture was out there because he couldn't have money to pay for the rent. Yeah, it was bad.
Do you mean to say we have taken all in considered, even the comments by the public? Oh, excellent. Oh, we've done a good job. Honorable members, I think I have to thank you very much. Thank you very, very much for the effort that we have made, the breakthrough that we have came through. It was not easy. It was so difficult, but we have tried our best. So we also thank Staff Sethu, Akumbi Ushamini. Abona Ushamini has done a wonderful job for this committee. But I think now the process, we are going to, the staff is going to work on it, and then we send the information to the department, and we also request the Parliament to extend Gwesha, and then we'll motivate why we're extending, because we're supposed to finish today. Reasons for extending, as well as applying for, I don't know what to call it. It will depend where it's redraft. Where they, no, we can't approve this legislation. Either we amend, because committees, constitutionally, we initiate. Mr. Stade, you like that one?
I want to
you like that one? No, we can do that. No, it's not difficult. It's not so difficult. I can see now. We are initiating now. Yes, this is our bill too, this one. This is our first bill, because the department brought
their own. But this is our data because we're starting to